Welcome to Nightlight. Step away from the mainstream and gather around as we help enlighten the world around us and travel this cosmic journey we call life. Join us as we share with you and provide that beacon that can guide us all to a better way. Nightlight. A reminder that you are never alone. And now your host, internationally renowned spiritual intuit, medium, channel, author, artist, lecturer, and ordained minister, Ms. Barbara DeLong.
Ken, and welcome everyone. That was the magical voice of Ken Quiet Hawk, inviting you to come in out of the mainstream and join with us for a time to be sheltered from the storms of evolution and change, that which we call creation. Come and join with other light-minded spirits as we weave our lights together to seek understanding, enlightenment, and wisdom. These are times of change, times that call to the light workers. And you answer that call from all walks of life and from countless aspects of the spiritual realms. This is a time of awakening, of sharing, and evolving, of spreading your wings and soaring on the cosmic breath of creation. We all come from different backgrounds and modalities, from all walks of life, and yet there is a synchronicity, a commonality that draws and blends us together, weaving us once more into a collective purpose, a common direction, and a united family once again. We go by different titles: watchers, wardens, indigos, soothsayers, mystics, questers, querens, journeyers and journeymen, seekers, star children, philosophers, light workers, light bearers, and well, the list, it goes on and on and on. It is as unique and eclectic as are we. Yet we all have that same spiritual calling, and we all in our own very individual ways bring light into this reality to facilitate the awakening and the shifting of consciousness for all of mankind. This is my own very private oasis in the turmoil we call evolution, so sit back, take a break, share your lights with us, and join in the love, the light, and the laughter that spiritual energy always generates when lights are blended and spirits lifted. I'm Barb DeLong, your host. And along with my guest tonight, Cynthia Jordan, almost forgot her name, we welcome you to add your lights to ours and increase and brighten all of our personal lights. I want to let you know that Ken Quiet Hawk can be found at nativestorytellers.com. Cynthia can be found at Cynthia Music, and I'm at barbaradelong.com. I have a very special guest tonight. Her name is Cynthia Jordan. And I met her as a musician and an artist and a composer. And I found and learned and found that she has not only phenomenal musical gifts, and they are amazing. She has an amazing voice. She is an entrepreneur. She is not only someone who has her gift and uses it, but she goes beyond that. And another gift she has is writing, and she has recently published a book called Pearl. And Pearl is an amazing story, and I'm going to read to you a little bit about what Pearl's about, and then we're going to talk to Cindy about how she got involved in all of this, because that story is phenomenal as well. The title of the book, again, is Pearl. Fate had brought Victoria Pearl to live in West Texas, and in 1921, she opened Pearl's Parlor, incorporating her experiences in Chicago along with the knowledge she had learned about men, business, and making happy, satisfied customers. Victoria Pearl saw many changes in her lifetime, but nothing as drastic as the changes for American women after World War I. For decades, the Victorian age dominated society in a formal, conservative fashion. In 1920, The 19th Amendment gave women the right to vote, inspiring a culture soon to be known as the New Woman. Skirts and hairstyles became shorter, and the music of jazz, as the jazz age, promoted a new sensuous attitude of sexuality. The term flapper was created from the idea that women were becoming free to flap their wings, and the more and more women were graduating with a college education. Before the 1920s, only prostitutes smoked, drank liquor, revealed too much leg, and wore makeup. Until 1923, birth control and women wearing trousers had been against the law in America. Attitudes were changing, and condoms like the Merry Widow and the Chic, named after Rudy Valentino's movie, were becoming available in drugstores everywhere. With the onset of prohibition, San Angelo, Texas had 63 pharmacies that sold booze by prescription. All you had to do was pick up your preference of liquor written on a piece of paper from a basket as you walked into the store and take it to the counter. The Roaring Twenties were on fire, and San Angelo was a fun place to be. Victoria Pearl was a successful entrepreneur in San Angelo, Texas. She bought a mansion on the Concho River, where she opened a business she called Miss Pearl's Parlor. Everyone who patronized the parlor knew her as Miss Pearl. The girls called her mother, and St. Angelo knew her as Madam. Like many women in her business, she liked to maintain a professional mystique, and name-changing was common to accomplish just that. Miss Pearl was adamant that her girls be educated and current with the latest news in politics and trends. Her experience working as a courtesan in the Everly House in Chicago taught her well. She had learned from Ada and Minna Everly the importance of etiquette, knowledge, and how a woman should conduct herself in the most ladylike fashion. Life had taught her many lessons, and Pearl felt a strong need to pass the knowledge on to her girls. In 1923, West Texas began prospering from oil exploration, with San Angelo at the heart of the boom. It all began May 28th, when the Santa Rita oil well finally became producing crude oil in the Permian Basin. San Angelo was ideally located and had already been established as a major trading center. With an elevation of 2,300 feet above sea level, San Angelo boasted weather pleasant most of the year, with an arid climate and bright blue skies. The gentle flow of the Concho River's teal green waters along serene riverbanks made a picturesque setting through the middle of town. Victoria Pearl had fallen in love with San Angelo and found it to be a perfect place to run her business. Throughout the year, several girls came and left Miss Pearl's parlor. Our story will focus on how, in May of 1923, 13 ladies, including Victoria Pearl, became a part of Miss Pearl's parlor. Together, they all learned how to prosper and survive in a time when there were very few options for single women, and one sexual experience put a girl in the category of fallen women. Like the discovery of a lustrous pearl, when a woman is appreciated and adored, she will open herself to reveal the sacred treasures and gifts she holds deep within her heart. In her story, Miss Pearl teaches us that the human experience is fascinating, and nothing on earth can compare to the deep love we are all capable of giving. Miss Pearl's philosophy was simple. To be in denial of your human sexual desires is simply unnatural. And Cindy has taken all of this and woven it into one of the most beautiful stories I think I've had the fun of reading. I couldn't put it down. Hi, Cindy, are you there?
Here I am.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, wanted to create a foundation so that you can sort of weave us the dream. Tell us how this book, because, you know, this is not your normal topic of expertise. I know you from the nun story down in San Angelo, and I know you from Jose Cuervo. You are a friend of mine, and now you come into being a phenomenal historian, telling a story not only about the history of San Angelo, but of women in the early 1920s. And it's magical. It's amazing. And I have to say, I could not put the book down.
Well, Barbara, I have been told many times that I was a madam in a past life. So there you have it.
Well, madam, you have done well by your girls, let me tell you.
I knew things about this business that I didn't learn in this lifetime. I just knew them. And I've known that for a while. And the reason I put pen to paper on this project was because those women, the ladies of the evening, Sweet Cream Ladies, there was a song in the 70s, I believe, called that. Those women really held so many things together. They were secretive. They had integrity. But they were looked up. They were the women, at least in this town and in many towns, that supported orphan children. And remember in the movie Gone with the Wind, Belle, she so loved Rhett Butler, and she was there for him. They're the salt of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
But they had never had a voice. They've never been understood by society. They were used by men and thrown away like yesterday's garbage. And the women shunned them. They were treated horribly. Yet they had this amazing sense of understanding each other in a way, in so many different ways. And in the book, you find the way that women understand each other. For instance, any of us that have ever had a child, when you see another woman who's pregnant, you don't have to say anything to them. You know exactly what they're going through, and there's this acknowledgement between women, and a lot of times, that's why a lot of times women will smile at a woman who's pregnant. We all, excuse me for all of you men that are listening right now, but we all know what that 28-day cycle is and what our bodies do. So when somebody says, I'm not feeling well because it's my time of the month, and every woman knows what she's going through. So in other words, there's this silent understanding that goes instinctively throughout women. There's a wonderful book called The Red Tent. That is the story where it was a Jewish woman. She described the culture of that time and how the women would all go into a tent, because when women that all lived together in great numbers, they menstruate at the same time. And they would go in, they would sit on straw. And that's where they'd have these private conversations that they understood that men would not listen to. That's where they had their babies, their miscarriages. That's where they would birth, and they would, again, menstruate on the straw. There's this thing that happens with women instinctively that we just understand. And those women, the women of the ladies of the evening, understood men in ways that their wives never really did, because they weren't allowed to. It's not that they didn't want to, but they were told, and even now, that they were, that bad girls like sex, that sex is bad. Oh, you're so bad. Aren't you, and you look at a hot little set of buns walking down the street, and if you look, oh, I have a girlfriend says, oh, you're so bad, Cindy. I said, hey, I like to admire a good physique, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I think one of the fascinating things about it too is that, at least during this time frame, anybody is capable of making a mistake. Anyone is capable of believing something someone says to them and trusting them, and then being betrayed by them. But today, it's not looked upon in the same way as it was in that particular time frame. If a woman wasn't a virgin, then she had to be a whore. I mean, there was just nothing in between, and so it gets to the your book is just so fabulous in that I can't remember now, but I think maybe just one of the women actually did it because she enjoyed it. But for the most part, it was the only option open to these women to survive.
Exactly. And it was the only way a woman could become wealthy if you were an entrepreneur.
Yes.
The only. Did I say the only way?
Yes.
for zero opportunities for women, especially entrepreneurial women. So if you didn't marry rich, which happened very rarely, people only stayed with their classes, or you weren't born rich, too bad. Nowadays, especially in America, if you're an entrepreneur, a woman can start a business and become wealthy without having to lay on her back for it.
Yeah.
And
I think what really your book really rams home is, now this is the 1920s we're talking about, but there were no occupations open to women. And not only that, but women weren't even expected to be educated. They just were expected to be able to keep a house, raise children, and keep their mouths shut. And
right.
And what places like Miss Pearl enabled women to do was to get involved in their music, to get involved in whatever art or craft or whatever. And she insisted that they all read the newspaper so that they all be able to speak intelligently, because part of what made Miss Pearl so wonderful was that these women could actually speak with these men, could talk, and she had a rule that you had to spend an hour or two with someone before you took them upstairs. So you had to be able to hold a conversation.
That's exactly right.
It was better than finishing school, as far as I'm concerned.
That's it. In fact, you know, right now, Barbara, this is a good point for you to play the part with Ada and Minna, so you can that explains exactly what the rules were and how Pearl learned the craft.
Okay, Ada and Minna's philosophy, right?
Right. What they did was she learned in the book, and this is all true, Ada and Minna were real people, and this was how they ran their business. They ran the most successful brothel in Chicago at a time there were 500 brothels and bordellos in Chicago, and became millionaires doing it.
Okay.
So
I'm gonna play that clip.
Okay.
Minna and Ada Everlay were extremely wise women.
The first thing you must always remember is to forget why you are here. Be charming and have a good time. Men are wired differently than women. They have physical needs as well as a longing for female companionship. Here at the Everlay House, we have a service to fulfill, both with grace and elegance. This is how we will compete with any other brothels in Chicago. If a man just wants sex, he can go down the street and pay less for it. Here, we give them much more.
Minna was much more outspoken than her sister.
You will not be lined up like cattle. You will position yourselves in different locations throughout the house. Gentlemen only act as gentlemen when properly introduced to a lady. And remember, you are all ladies. You will receive regular examinations by a doctor. All of you are healthy now, and we expect you to stay that way. Men like women to be clean and smelling nicely. Do not be hasty to take anyone upstairs. We require that you spend at least an hour in conversation with any potential clients. This fulfills the male need for companionship. Remember, you are their fantasy girls.
We want our girls to be masterful and creative with their talents. There are several ways to satisfy a man's needs with no fear of pregnancy or disease. Again, your attitude will provide the excitement he longs for. After a man has reached his climax, your power is gone, and typically, his adoring nature will change. The longer he is experiencing your charms, the more erotic his experience will be. This increases the potential that he will return.
You will all be paid $100 a week, and you are allowed to receive tips and gifts. You have a beautiful place to live and delicious food to eat. We will be sure you are dressed well. The entry fee for every client is $10. We will charge $50 for dinner, $12 for a bottle of wine, and $50 to spend time with you. Make no mistake, we will soon be known as the finest in Chicago.
Amazing. This is an excerpt from the book. The book is available on Kindle. It's also, I think, it's available on discs I know that you had actors read the entire book. So how is that available? Where is that available?
That will be available next week. In fact, I encourage anybody that's listening to please visit my website. There's a place you can become a member, and don't worry, I won't hound you with emails all the time. But it does keep you updated. We're going to be having blogs and surveys, and we're going to be having a lot of fun. Some meetup groups are going to be getting together. More time with you, Barbara. We've already talked about that. So please come to theladypearls.com or cynthiamusic.com. Just put in your name and your email, and I will totally update you on everything. I had a long two-hour talk with the people who are interested in making it a movie today. So there's a lot going on with this book, so don't miss out on all this fun stuff that we're doing.
On top of the fact that it's a great book, what I was fascinated with is that Cindy didn't make up these girls. She channeled them. And explain how that process went, because that was really cool.
Just their names. Did I happen to send you the Ginger, the one with Ginger, the soundbite with Ginger? I don't know that.
No.
I did. Okay.
No.
The girls are... Well, I'll tell you what would be good is to play the Emma Grace one in just a second, and I'll explain, answer your question, then we can do that. The girls, all the stories are real. In other words, in one aspect or another, these stories happen to people I know, people I read about, but I did change all the names. I did make up the names of the characters for lots of reasons. What was interesting, Barbara, was I think I told you this has been a very spiritual experience. It started with me hearing these voices that said, please tell them why we did it. We weren't bad people. I just kept hearing that in my head. We weren't bad people. Tell them why we did it. Tell them why we did it. So I started listening to their stories from the other side. I know that doesn't sound strange to you. It does to some of my their
not
stories
strange, not strange at all.
And I would hear their stories, and I started writing their stories, and with putting details that I know from this side of that voice, you know, describing things. I mean, in other words, they didn't describe the house and where they lived exactly. I just knew their stories. And then in the middle of all my research, I found a survey taken at the turn of the century to women why they got into prostitution. And I nailed every one of them. I nailed every one of them. A very small percentage got into it because they were just kind of wild party girls, right?
Uh-huh.
There may be less than 1%. The majority of them got into it because of abuse. Many times the families would be very, very poor and they needed money. Some of them were widows. Some of them had run away from home and gotten a bad situation. And like what you were reading earlier, if you were soiled, you were a fallen woman, and they were too ashamed to go home, so they got into prostitution. And all of those subjects are covered and also Ginger's mother in the book, she sold. I found out that a lot of sometimes the families would sell their daughters into prostitution, which happens to one of the girls in the book. So there's 10 different women who work as ladies of the evening, courtesans, at Miss Pearl's parlor. And then there's a young woman who comes to Pearl, and her name is Emma Grace. And I think this is a good place to play that little excerpt, because you get a feel for how mean, you can just see a young girl. She's an orphan. Her father just died. She has nowhere to go. She's pretty. And that was the thing about the Everlay house that got carried over to Miss Pearl's. If they were pretty, remember the show My Fair Lady?
Yes.
The Everlay sisters would take, all they had to do was be pretty and have some kind of wit and charm and some kind of intelligence, and they would refine these women. They would take them and turn them into ladies. And in those days, to be called a lady or a gentleman, you had high standards, very high standards. In fact, I saw a movie the other day where somebody just said, yes, he's a gentleman, which just meant he's qualified for the top of the cream of the crop, right? Which now you don't, you hardly hear terms like this or even qualifications or standards for, to be a lady or a gentleman. But in those days, it was a big deal if you were a lady or a gentleman. And you had to be properly introduced to get into social circles. And so this is the story of Emma Grace. She's a pretty girl, and Pearl sees that she's a very pretty girl. So she knows she'll be good for business because she's always talking about business. But you also hear a compassion in how Pearl treats Emma Grace. So I think that this is a good place to play that one.
Okie doke.
Excuse me, ma'am, are you Miss Pearl?
Yes, I am, dear. The young woman pulled a letter from a small leather bag.
A very nice gentleman, Mr. Swanson, told me to come see you, Miss Pearl.
I see. Come up on the porch, dear. Mosella, would you please bring us some iced tea?
Yes, ma'am. Psalms 104. Some wandered in the wilderness, lost and homeless.
Sit here, dear. You look tired. What is your name, honey?
My name is Emma Grace, ma'am.
You are quite pretty, Emma Grace.
Thank you, ma'am. I've fallen on some hard times, Miss Pearl. I have no place to go, and Mr. Swanson told me I should come and talk to you about a job.
Emma Grace quickly handed her the letter. Pearl opened the envelope, put on her reading glasses, and began reading the letter out loud. May 23, 1923. Dear Miss Pearl, I hope this letter finds you well. My purpose for writing is to introduce you to Emma Grace. Her father was a lunger, and they came to West Texas when he became ill. Unfortunately, her father died of tuberculosis in Carlsbad last week. He was a good man and strong in character. I recommended that Emma Grace contact you, as I personally hold her in good standing. With kind regards, Mr. Charles J. Swanson. Good old Charlie. He always had an eye for a pretty girl. Well, Emma Grace, tell me about yourself.
Mother died when I was born, and Daddy and I came to St. Angelo several weeks ago. He had tuberculosis. They called him a lunger, and he has been in the sanatorium in Carlsbad. I guess it was too late for my Daddy. He died last Thursday. There isn't much money left, and I'm afraid I don't know what to do. I have nowhere to go, Miss Pearl. I have an aunt and uncle back in Missouri, but they have 7 children already. I certainly don't want to be a burden.
Mosella walked out on the porch and handed Emma Grace a glass of cold mint tea. As she turned to go back into the house, she raised her eyebrows at Pearl and smiled. You are quite lovely, Emma Grace. Did Charlie, Mr. Swanson, tell you about what we do here?
Yes, ma'am, I know.
Emma Grace looked at Pearl with all the courage she could muster.
Miss Pearl, I have never been with a man before.
Pearl was taken by Emma's sweetness and charm. Somehow I knew that, dear.
But I'm sure I can learn.
Pearl liked her. I have an idea. Mosella could use some help with some domestic chores. Can you cook?
Oh, yes, ma'am. I have been cooking for my daddy my whole life.
Well, at least you won't go hungry. And we can put a roof over your head. Another pretty face at the parlor is always advantageous. Emma Grace, I believe you could do well in my business. However, I do not want you doing anything you are not ready to do. Why don't we give it a few weeks and see what happens? Come on in the house, honey. Mozilla will be happy to have the extra help right now. It's Friday night, and the girls are bubbling over with excitement. We are expecting cowboys tonight. It is the spring of 1923. Fate has brought 13 women together to work at Miss Pearl's parlor in San Angelo, Texas. These are their stories.
Amazing. You know, I keep hearing stuff, and it's sort of like, I remember that. And the other thing that I don't think a lot of people know, or we haven't actually said anything about it, you wrote music to go along with the book. So there are, I can't remember how many, but there are half dozen at least songs that you have written and sung that go along with the book.
Exactly.
And I know one of them is when the cowboys are coming to town, and you didn't send me that one. So
Oh, okay. Well, by the way, all that piano music and that you're hearing, the piano music, that's also my music.
Ah.
So that's all the Cynthia music. So sometimes I just inserted some of the Cynthia music in some tender moments there, got a lot of sound effects. I really tried to make it the reader feel, you know, feel the emotion that was going on. So that's a very tender piece. Actually, that piece of music that just played is called Dreams of Holding You for the First Time, which I wrote for my New Beginnings series of music, which was for expectant mothers, and that's a very tender piece that just played, and I love this project, Barbara. It's been a lot of fun. I'll tell you, if you want to play something kind of fun and upbeat,
absolutely,
you might want to play the Santa Rita Boogie, because that is fun. And so everybody who's listening, this will make you want to get up and dance. So feel free to do so. We can't see you. Take
here
off
comes
your clothes.
In 23, Big Lake, Texas was the place to be. Some bankers, investors, a couple of nuns funded a well back in 21. 18 months, 5 feet a day. The Santa Rita well finally made the pay. They did the Santa Rita boogie. They did the Santa Rita boogie. They did the Santa Rita boogie. All night long. Day after day, from May to June, the oil kept coming and it started a boom. They finally set pipe to control the flow. Texas tea, the Santa Rita gold. It was named for a saint of impossible things. It's amazing. They did the Santa Rita boogie and they boogie-woogied all night long. Miles around San Angelo. became an old boom town. The cactus was built 14 stories high. The Concho River was the water supply. A college, a theater, saloons and the train. Plenty of men, and all the girls came to do the Santa Rita Boogie. They did the Santa Rita Boogie. They did the Santa Rita Boogie, and they boogie-woogied all night long. They did the Santa Rita Boogie. They did the Santa Rita Boogie. They did the Santa Rita Boogie, and they boogie-woogied all night long. They did the Santa Rita Boogie, and they boogie-woogied all night long.
Okay, did you compose the music as you were going, or did that come afterwards?
It all comes at the same time.
Holy mackerel. Did you even have a life during the time you did this?
Well, that's a good question for my husband. I think he felt like he didn't have a wife.
Well, you know, I just think that what is so fascinating to me is all of the different stories, all of the different women, they all give you get their bios before you really get the interaction with Miss Pearl, really. But it's just so fascinating to hear how each of them came to turn up at Miss Pearl's parlor, and it's amazing that you know, Miss Pearl even has a love story of her own and then but continues to run the house because it's not really a house of ill repute. It's a home for these ladies, and it's a place of sanctuary for a lot of men. And it is obviously a whorehouse. There has to be a better word for it because they're beautiful stories. This is not porn. I mean, if you're looking for a 50 Shades of Grey or whatever, forget it. This isn't it. But the stories are just so touching, and you begin to you know, even look at people who have this is their way of life, you tend to look at them in another way because sometimes our pathways are chosen for us. In some ways, you know, we are imposed upon a lifestyle that is not exactly one that we would have chosen, and you know, these women really had great courage, great strength, great wisdom. They were just amazing women, and it makes you want to, you know, find a whorehouse or a brothel and sit down and talk to all the ladies, because I really, you know, it gives them such depth. They are not just, you know, flat out single dimensional people or objects or things like that. They have great dimension. They have great empathy, and they have compassion, and they have understanding, and she made them learn. She made them grow. She made them so much better than they were when they walked through her door.
Yes, yes. And in fact, at the Everlay House, which you, when you read it, you assume this, one thing that really blew my mind was that the Everlay sisters and their doctor especially recommended that the women would not have intercourse. And that one just really blew my mind, because everything that I had thought about brothels and bordellas kind of went out the window. At the Everlay House, it was all about the companionship, which is really the deep hunger that men had. And they could talk to these women about anything that they couldn't really maybe say to their wives. They might have these secret little fantasies that they could do with these women that they couldn't say to their wives, right? Because these women, they just felt safe with them. I felt it was very interesting. By the way, Barbara, I wrote this in the chat room, but if one of the, I can feel that the girls are all excited because we're talking about them. So if any of them come floating into you, don't hesitate.
Okay. Just speak
make you aware. If I can feel that they're all buzzing, and I can feel this buzz. Like they're going, oh, look at, they're on the radio. So
yeah.
If somebody comes through, and they will, just feel in the nudge, just be aware of that. I thought that something that could be kind of cute right now, which is one of my favorite things. I have a friend here in San Angelo, Texas, for all of you East Coast ladies and gentlemen, who is from New Jersey. And she can really twine on the accent. I mean, she really does. And she would tell me about her grandmother. Her grandmother had her husband actually moved his girlfriend next door, in the house next door. Okay. And, of course, you know, this was at the turn of the century. The grandmother is still alive, by the way. The grandmother is now 104 years old. Her grandmother is. And her husband, when I tell you all the stories are real, they are.
Yeah.
I might have changed a few things, and I did change names. And so her husband, of course, the wives, you know, if your men could do whatever they wanted to, and especially, you know, you don't argue with it, especially Italian men, and he was Italian, right? It's just a known fact. The Italian man probably has a mistress somewhere. So he'd come home drunk. He'd go to his girlfriend's. He'd come home drunk, and she used to empty out his pockets. And he never questioned her because he didn't know where he'd been or what he'd done with the money, right? So she just kept this little stash going, her grandmother. I mean, she's a real character. So I wrote a part in my book with the idea that this would go on tape one day, and my girlfriend, who would tell me these stories about her grandmother, I would create a character to tell that story. So right now what I'd like you to do is play Aunt Rosie. It's my girlfriend, Tammy. She plays the part of Aunt Rosie. And Aunt Rosie is, you know, I made additions to the story, but the basic story of the girlfriend living next door and her emptying out the pockets and him gambling and that type of thing is all there. So let's listen to Aunt Rosie right now.
Okie doke.
My golden moment was at his funeral. Oh, she came all right. With her false eyelashes, shiny platinum hair, skin-tight dress with her boobies popping out, a fur Joey probably gave her, red lipstick, and a stick of gum she popped like a percolator making morning coffee. Cheap with no class, if you know what I mean. She sat in the back of the church and cried. Can you believe the knife? She even waved at me like she does every time I'd see her hanging out a dirty laundry. How do you think it made me feel seeing her hang out her bed sheets and my husband's green-striped underwear? I just smiled and waved back. It was better if they thought I didn't know. Then I'd go inside and stick pins in a Cupid doll that kind of looks like her that I got down on the boardwalk in Atlantic City. I guess they both thought I was too dumb to know what was going on.
How did he die, if I may ask?
I guess he made the wrong guy mad. Someone shot him in the alley behind the bar. I got the bar, the fancy car, the bank account, plus the stash I had been putting away. I even found a suitcase with $50,000 hidden in the closet behind a loose board when I was cleaning out his stuff. I deserved it. I went through hell those nights knowing he was right next door at her apartment doing whatever. Can you imagine a man who would put his girlfriend in the house right next door?
Everyone in the room shook their heads no.
Oh, yeah. I got the apartment house, too. Joey won it in a poker game. Joey! Joey! I guess because I got all the money, I got the last laugh after all. But I ain't laughing now. God, I miss the big glutes. Joey, if you can hear me, I forgive you. You and your green striped underwear and that crazy dame with the clothespins in her teeth. Damn it, Joey. Just damn it. I sure hope you ain't in hell. But you probably are.
Aw, that's too bad. Whatever happened to the girlfriend?
I don't know, and I don't care. I had her evicted the day after the funeral. She can keep them old green striped underwear. That's all she gets.
I love it. And, you know, I know of similar stories that have happened, you know, within the last 10, 15 years. So, yeah, it's something that repeats itself, maybe not the green striped underwear, but stories of men having girlfriends and the girlfriends turning up at, you know, husbands having girlfriends and the girlfriend turning up at the funeral and the wife just kind of looking at them and saying, "You thought I didn't know?"
Oh shoot! And then on the other hand, it's funny about women. Okay, then there's another character in the book, and she's a maid, and she was a maid, and her name is Clarice, and her daughter is Annabelle, and Clarice is a maid for a very wealthy family, and so the husband would get drunk. And she lived in a bungalow in the back of the house, and the husband would get drunk and go see the maid, right? But
yeah.
That was a different. But that's a different thing, right? Well,
oh, yeah.
Then you find out later that the wife knows all the time where her husband would go when he'd get drunk, and so the two women have a, kind of a come to Jesus meeting, well, and. And the wife actually says to her, she says, the maid says, "I'm so sorry about all that. I didn't, when he come over, I didn't know what to do. I was afraid of losing my job," which happened a lot back then. In fact, it hasn't been that long, if you think about it, Barbara, where women did sexual favors because they didn't want to lose their jobs. Okay?
Wait, and It still goes on.
I didn't want to say that. We'd like to think it's different, but I think you're right. And
no, it still goes on.
Yes, it does. And so the wife looks at her, and she says, "I'm so sorry. I didn't know what to do." And she says, "It's all right, honey. As long as you were doing my wifely duty, I didn't have to." I think that's a really powerful line there.
Absolutely.
I will repeat that. As long as you were doing my wifely duty, I didn't have to. Because, I mean, seriously, who wants to have some drunk guy climb on top of them, honestly?
I don't know anyone who would volunteer for that unless they were paid.
That's not exactly. That's not making love. That's something completely different.
Absolutely.
But, you know, the wives. Yeah, look at somebody in the chat room. I've been through it myself. Okay, let's see if anybody hasn't been through it. Yeah, because
No, I've experienced it.
Going crazy with this. They're going, yeah. That's exactly right.
It is out there today as blatantly as it has been in the past. I don't see any change. To be honest with you, they try to be a little more. Subtle about it, but the reality is still there. And in so many places, that's just expected of you.
Oh, yeah. I just put my two websites in the chat room for anybody there. Please join us. This isn't the end of this dialogue, right, Barbara?
Oh, yeah.
We really want to. I'm on a crusade about women and what we've had to put up with for so many years. We love men. We love men. All we want is respect. And that's the big thing in this, one of the big issues in this book is if you treasure a woman and see her value and make her understand that you see her value and how beautiful and the depth of her soul, she will give you and give you and give you and give you and give you. But we don't want to be used. We do not want to be used. And it happens all the time. The secretaries keep it together for their bosses, and the wives keep it together for their husbands, and the appreciation factor is not, does not come, if you have a good, now I'm so fortunate, my husband is wonderful, but things are taken for granted. Women are taken for granted in so many situations, but they couldn't survive without us in many respects. I mean, they could, but it wouldn't be very pretty.
So, and there wouldn't be any more men either if they didn't.
Yes.
I mean, let's face it, you know, we're both responsible for keeping the species going.
You know, I had a thought one time. I know they have test tube babies and stuff, but I thought, you know, if all the men on Earth were eradicated at one time, or they all just left the planet at one time,
yeah,
the species still survive because we have pregnant women, right? But if all the women, if all the women left the planet at the same time, the human species mm-hmm. would be dead. And that is the power that we have. They absolutely need us. Men need women. And unfortunately, what's happening now, because you can see this with the high rate of divorce, people just not putting up with stuff anymore, the patterns are passed down generation to generation, and women today aren't putting up with what their mothers might have put up with. They just don't want to. And so what's happening now is women are learning more about being independent, and they're finding they don't need men. But men really do need women. They do, because they just do, and they hate it because they do. Because especially when they're young, there's a physical need.
It's the physical, too, but it's also the fact that women have, and I'm not saying it's absolute, but women have a much deeper emotional well to draw from than men do, so that there's greater compassion there, and you're not gonna have a man putting his, often, you're not going to have a man putting his arms around another man and saying, just let it go, I understand what you're going through. It just doesn't happen.
But, you know, my girlfriend, she's a psychologist, and she was telling me about the diamond. And it's a real interesting understanding of, so you imagine a diamond, and imagine at the bottom of the diamond is two children that are playing in the sandbox, and they're 3-4 years old, right? And one's a boy mm-hmm. and one's a girl. And they don't see a sexual difference. They see nothing sexual about each other. They're just playing the sandbox, right?
Yep.
That diamond starts going apart as they get older, which means they start growing apart because of the sexuality, right? And in that first part of the diamond, as you're getting to the widest part, the woman is wanting the children and nourishing the household and being the homemaker and being the cook. And the man is out doing the hunt, you know, making the money. That's the energies. I'm not saying that that's how it happens right now, but in our instinctual, us as human beings, that's what happens, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the woman is the homemaker mother, and the man is the hunter-gatherer, okay? Then at the widest part, that's about the time that women kind of get menopausal, okay? And then the diamond starts coming back together. Well, on the top side of the diamond, the woman, and this has happened with me, is more interested in maybe making a career, finding her purpose in life, because her children are grown now. And the man is getting more emotionally needy, and you see him cooking more and doing the gardening more because he's already made his money, and now he wants to kind of slow down. Also in that part, the women are more sexually free because they don't have to worry about being pregnant anymore, right? And the man can't keep up with her. So you've got that going on until they meet at the top again, and that's the part where they're both sitting on the front porch with their little sweaters, and she's knitting, and he's smoking his pipe, okay? And so they don't see, it's all about companionship again. So that's the cycle of the human and then the top part of the diamond, she starts getting more testosterone, and he starts getting more estrogen. You're exactly right. So maybe he would be more apt to give that hug on the top part. And I see that with my own husband, that he's gotten more emotional. He likes to cook more. He likes to garden. He doesn't mind doing the dishes, right?
Yeah, so, and you're out there suddenly getting another career going.
Exactly. So that's happening in our own thing. So, again, I love men. We love men. We love men. But it's time for the balance and the mutual respect and not having expectations and being taken for granted anymore. So that's my thing. So now what I'd really like for you to do right now, Barbara, is we need to talk, we need to listen to Mrs. Comstock. Okay. And
Raven is my favorite.
Thank you, Raven.
Character.
Okay. So everybody, Miss Comstock. Now I didn't put this on the recording. She comes to Miss Pearl, and she says to Miss Pearl, she comes for advice because her sister Dora May says there is a critical part of a woman's physique that Dora May calls the magic button. And she says that when her Jimmy finds that magic button, that all kinds of wonderful things happen. And she doesn't know what it is, but Jimmy said that a woman in her profession taught him everything he needed to know about that. And so she comes to Miss Pearl thinking that maybe she can educate her husband. So this is a real cute little scene. And this is a conversation between Miss Comstock and Miss Pearl.
Okay. And again, if you get this book and you don't read any other chapter, read this one. you will just sit there and giggle.
Yeah. Then Dora May told me that from the depths of her being, she makes a big old loud sound, just like a coyote on the Texas plains, howling at the full moon above, just like this.
Pearl was amazed. She could hardly believe that such a big voice could come out of such a little woman. Ella May's howling brought Mosella barging through the double doors. Mosella and Pearl just watched.
Miss Pearl, that has never happened to me with my Henry. Everything all right, Miss Pearl?
All is well, Mosella. And I thought there was nothing in this world that could ever surprise me. I was so wrong.
Psalms 144, deliver me out of great waters from the hand of strange children.
Pearl had never had a meeting quite like this before, but admired Ella May and was impressed with her desire to explore new territories.
Now, Miss Pearl, I told you, I love my Henry with all my heart. I am a good Christian woman. However, My Henry used to ride broncs. And you know, sometimes those cowboys can get confused in thinking 8 seconds is a long time.
I love that chapter, and I love the whole book. I mean, but when I hit Miss Comstock, I just sat there. I think I went back and reread it a couple times because it was just so. I can see a good Christian woman wondering just what could possibly have been done to someone to get that kind of noise out of them, and frankly want to experience that too with her husband, of course. But it was just and you know, you'll have to read the chapter to see how the whole thing comes out, because it does have a happy ending.
Well, actually, that chapter is, to me, was one of the best chapters to write, because Miss Pearl educates Henry, and she does it so elegantly. And that whole chapter, like you said, every woman should show that chapter to her husband, and every man should really take a look at that, because honestly, Barbara.
Yeah, and I do want to explain also that she explains it to the husband, but she doesn't demonstrate it. She just explains it, and it's beautifully done.
Yes, yes, it is, because, well, thank you for that, because she talks about the attitude he needs to have. It's not so much the technique. It's more about the technique is very, you know, it's very simple, actually, but mm-hmm. It's the attitude that he should have behind it. And one of the things that she tells him was was something that I read actually with Deepak Chopra, okay? 17 seconds, or no, I'm sorry, takes 17 minutes to awaken the goddess. And my husband, it was several years ago, I had heard this from a talk that Deepak Chopra had with this woman, and she was speaking to an audience he was speaking to, and they were having this fun conversation back and forth. And it was 17 minutes to awaken the goddess. And so my husband took me to a place in Kentucky called, it was this waterfall place, and it is, gosh, I can't remember the name of it. I think it was called the moon. It had a moon bow, which meant when the moon is full, there's a rainbow that comes, it looks like an iridescent rainbow that appears at night off of this waterfall. And the only other place on the planet that it does the same thing is at Victoria Falls in Africa. So mm-hmm. We went there for this wonderful little, you know, getaway thing. And I had just heard this, and I brought incense and music and candles and stuff. And I said, honey, we had six children, and we didn't have that time that was between his children and my children. We had two together. It seemed like we just never had time for each other unless we got away. So I said, let's play a little game called 17 Minutes to Awaken the Goddess. And so I said, now. And I said, there's the clock now. And I'll tell you what, it wasn't business as usual. We had 17 minutes, and that can be kind of a long time of him only giving attention to me. Now, at 17 minutes, we were both so ready for whatever that it was even better for him, too. And that's mm-hmm. the thing that talks about. He goes, wow, that was even better for me. Now that, but who, so I thought to myself, Who tells their sons this stuff? We always go to our daughters and tell them how not to get pregnant, right?
Mm-hmm.
At least that happened with me. Now, remember, if this so you're usually about to, so that when we educate young girls on this, we say, now this is how you don't get pregnant. Just don't get pregnant. Just don't get pregnant, right? That's what,
yeah.
Because this is what will happen. Don't get pregnant. Don't get pregnant. But we don't educate our sons on how to treat a woman, or we give them the same message maybe, but we never say, you know, we just don't. So how are our sons supposed to know? When most women, at least in my generation, now that I've talked to and older, a lot of times these women were never educated at all. They had to find out on their own from friends or because parents just didn't like talking about it. And so at one point, with my son, I said, Jordan, he was 16 years old. And I said, Jordan, let me tell you something, son. It takes 17 minutes to awaken the goddess. And I explained that to him. I said, don't you ever, ever go crawling on a girl and spend a couple of minutes doing whatever. I said, don't you ever do that. I said, it takes 17 minutes to awaken the goddess. And if you want the best experience, you wait for her to invite you. And you will have, you let her tell you when she's ready. Okay? Whoa. So, now my son was never a player. I shouldn't be talking about his personal life. He'd probably kill me if I told him. But he was very selective. He hasn't been with that many women. But he came to me one day, and he told me, he said, Mom, that really was a good piece of advice because he goes, that's what he is, because I told him. So all of you mothers that have teenage sons, the best thing you could ever do for their girlfriends and wives is say, son, to me.
Well, you know.
And that's what Pearl says to Henry. She talks about that. So,
you know, I don't know if they still do it today. Probably not. But when I was in the fifth grade, they pulled all the girls out of class and they showed us, it was done by Disney. A movie on, you know, having your period and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
and how babies were made. But I think there should be a film shown to 16-year-olds, 15, 16-year-old boys. Explaining,
oh, absolutely.
I mean, they are absolutely clueless, and it's a shame. It's a real shame. I mean, schools do talk about sex. And they explain how a baby is made, but
right.
You know, you can't go into the other stuff. It's just it you know, you'd have parents upside your head, you know, if you went into technique and stuff like that. But I do think there really should be something like that out there for young men, because it's a very sad testimony to our education system that if parents are too shy to talk to our children about something like this, then we send them out into the world so unprepared. And, you know, some girls just think you have to suffer through it. And other, you know, it all depends on what your friends are and what they've experienced and what you learn from that. And that's usually it for most girls. So that I think that there should be a training school, maybe for marriage. Maybe it should be, you know, for engaged couples. You know, you have to go through this sensitivity training class that involves, you know, how do you pleasure a partner and things like that. It's got to be someplace, because it's so sad that it's not really available out there. Because most parents don't understand anything either. So you can't expect them to educate children because they don't know any better.
Exactly. Well, I mean, there's magazines now, but you know, in dialogue, now, one thing, you know, children are having sex, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's abominable what's happening now, and it's all about these poor little girls wanting to be popular with the guys, because it's so easy to get now, they can't, they can't compete. And in the old days, you know, it's gotten more and more and more to where there was a handful of girls that would put out, right? What they would say, and they call them the bad girls. And then there was the good girls. I just saw Splendor in the Grass the other day, which happened in the 1920s. That's a great movie that talks all about this. I mean, she actually goes crazy because the young man that she loves goes and with the girl that he knows will put out, and she goes crazy and ends up in a funny farm because she's trying to be a good girl, you know. A good girl. So that's not what our humanity is, but it needs to be taught. That's what this whole book is about. I mean, it's full of talking points, Barbara. You could read the, if you're talking to your 12-year-old child, read them the story of Maggie and her grandmother having this talk, this sexual talk. And if you're talking to somebody older that's getting married, or maybe someone you've been married to for 30 years that just needs some education, then show them the part about the Comstocks. Just read it, because you don't have to say you're doing anything wrong. People can't, men can't, no one told them. Nobody told them. In the old days, oh my God, in the Victorian age, it was, if you were a gentleman, you do not have sex with your wife when she's pregnant or menstruating. Okay, so what would happen? These men, they would marry a girl, you know, oh boy, finally, here we go, they have sex. Within a few months, she's pregnant. Okay, so they've had sex a couple, you know, literally just for several weeks. And now he's a gentleman, so he can't touch her because she's pregnant.
Have we played the Granny Explains Sex excerpt yet?
I'm sorry?
Have we done the Granny Explains Sex?
No, we haven't done that one. We can do it. It's a little bit long, but we can do it if you want to. It's cute.
Let's do this one because I loved Granny.
Granny, tell me about sex.
Why in the world are you asking me that, Maggie?
Bobby Ray just wrote me and told me he had sex with a girl, and now they're going to have a baby. He had to marry her.
Oh, Lordy sakes, child. Let me think about this a minute. Okay, sex is when a man and a woman, remember when Honey and Speckles were hooked together and you asked me what they were doing? That was sex. Then remember Honey had those three little puppies? That's what happens when men and women have sex.
Maggie's father, listening to the conversation through the back screen door, walked in grinning from ear to ear. The first time anyone had seen him smile since he had returned from the war.
Come outside. Sit with me on the front porch, Maggie. I'll tell you what you need to know. Sex is when a man and a woman experience oneness, Maggie. It can be a beautiful experience if it's done in the spirit of love like your mother and I. You know how Speckles has a penis and Honey has just an opening? Same goes for men and women. Your brothers each have a penis. Sex happens when the penis becomes stiff and it's inserted into the woman's opening to plant the seed for a baby to grow. Sex is when a man and a woman experience oneness, Maggie. It can be a beautiful experience if it is done in the spirit of love, like your mother and I.
In an enlightening moment, Maggie put it all together.
Oh. I guess then I had sex with Bobby Ray, Daddy. I just didn't know what it was. I just know it was nice.
Maggie's father deeply looked into his daughter's innocent face and could not help but smile. How could he be upset with her? No one had ever told her about sex before. She didn't even know if it was wrong or not. Maggie's father loved her openness and honesty. Her naivete made her even more sweet and innocent. Jonathan thought of the different women he had found comfort with and of his beloved Louise and the way she smiled at him after they had made love. Soon afterwards, Louise usually would ask him to make love to her again.
Maggie, I believe you and Bobby Ray made love. Even though technically it's the same action, sex and making love are really two different things. Sex is just the act itself. Even Honey and Speckles didn't make love. They just followed their instincts. Humans are different because sex can be an expression of love for a man and woman to share in the most intimate way.
Okay, Daddy. I think I understand it better now. But Bobby Ray and I didn't make a baby. How come?
Well, it doesn't happen every time, Maggie. If I were you, I'd consider myself lucky.
Daddy, do you think Bobby Ray made love or just had sex with that girl? He told me she reminded him of me.
Men are made different from women, Maggie. They have basic physical urges to have sex. And love is not as important to them as it is to women. Unfortunately for Bobby Ray, I think he just had an itch that needed to be scratched. Now he has to pay the consequences. I feel kind of bad for him.
Thanks, Daddy. You must miss Mama terrible. I miss Mama too.
Maggie kissed her daddy on the cheek. She went back into the house to her room. Granny walked out onto the porch to talk to her son.
Good job, Jonathan. Aren't you angry about Maggie and Bobby Ray?
Mama, after what I've seen in the last 5 years, two young people making love is not on my list of terrible things. On the battlefield, I saw boys die whose only sexual experience had been with a prostitute. A lot of them had syphilis. No, Mama, love is always a good thing, and I believe Bobby Ray loved Maggie in a puppy love kind of way.
I guess you're right, son. Boy, did she ever throw me for a loop. I honestly didn't know what to say to her. No one told me about sex before I married your pa. In fact, the night before my wedding, your grandmother told me that it hurt. But you had to do it to have children. She said it was a wifely duty. The problem was she never explained what it was. She just kept calling it it.
And you know what? It's the same today. And that's almost 100 years ago. It's the same today. Lots of mothers just not knowing how to say or what to say. And so there's just hoping that out on the street there's a good explanation.
Yeah, I think you might be right. It's awkward. But then, again, like I was talking to my 14-year-old niece, and she said, you know, Aunt Cindy, she says, I don't want to talk to my mother about this stuff. Whoa. And I went, okay. Because really, I think it's an awkward subject for parents and children. Because for one thing, the first thing that came to my mind, and I think it happens to a lot of, I said, ooh, my mother and dad did that? Mother told me when I was 8 years old. She had a little polywah, a little chicken, you know, this little book. And she told me when I was 8 years old. And I dedicated this book to my mother because one thing that she said when she was giving me the talk, and I never forgot it. I was only eight. I filed it. I didn't know what it meant, but I filed it. And I said, Mom, I was looking at these pictures with the polywog and the egg, and I'm going, ew, they did, what, ew. Well, I guess thinking, ew, God, how did they manage that, you know? And then I started having pictures of my mother, you know, on the bathroom sink, maybe. I mean, I couldn't figure out how that would even happen, you know. And I go, God, they must really wanted a baby bad to want to do that. And then I asked my mother, I said, well, So these were the thoughts going in my head. It was like, my parents did this. Ew, you know?
Yeah.
And so then...
Well, and you know, even to this day, I think back on my parents and I think, oh, God, no way. How could they possibly? I mean, you know, it's just something about thinking about your parents.
Exactly. And then I asked my mother, I said, well, Mom, how do you know if the polywog, do you know if the polywog got to the egg? I mean, how do you know if it even gets there? Can you feel something? I mean, and you know what she said, and this is why I dedicated the book to her, and Miss Pearl says it to Emma Grace. She says, it's like walking through a field of flowers that all open up at once. That's what my mother said that to me when I was 8 years old.
Wow.
And I went, I don't know what that meant. I mean, I totally didn't understand what she meant at the time. But then when I grew up and I was in love and I did have the oneness experience, I thought, wow, what a great description of what that is.
Mm-hmm.
All opening up at once. So I had a great mother, thank God. And she put me on the right path. She never told me it was dirty. My husband's mother was told that it was a shameful act that you only do when you want children.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're told that, right, and the man does not know, okay, so doesn't know anything about foreplay, all he knows is what he knows instinctively, which takes less than 5 minutes most of the time.
That's a lot.
Yeah, if that much, which we find out in the chapter Ginger. When I tried to lighten the mood, because Ginger in the book, her mother sells her to Madame Georgia in Storyville in New Orleans, and Ginger, you know, they're getting high money for her because she is a virgin, and so this girl kind of tries to give her the 5 minute lesson of what to do. And she says, don't worry, honey. Some, you know, a lot of times it doesn't take more than 5 minutes most of the time. And, so Ginger's upstairs and with this man, and he doesn't come down for an hour. He pays like $3,500 for her, which was huge money back then. And he comes down and all his buddies are clapping and, you know, yay for you and all this stuff. And Madame Georgia says to Jen, you know, to Carla, the girl, she says, go up and check on Ginger, make sure she's okay. You know, so she walks in and, I mean, the whole scene is so horrible that the mother would sell their child as a virgin to be auctioned off like that,
mm-hmm.
right? Which happened. That stuff happened. It was about the money, and it was just, so the reader, I know, would be just going, oh, my God. I mean, I've had people who've read the book that have said, Cindy, that was so horrible. I mean, I could barely read that part. That's why I tried to make it light, and Carla walks in, and she says, and her eyes are just big, and she says, are you okay? She says, yeah. She says, I thought you said it would only take about 5 minutes. And Carl says, oh, honey, I'm sorry. Sometimes, you know, sometimes it is, it can be more. And she goes, no, I don't think it even took two. And Carl says, well, what have you been doing up here for an hour? She goes, we've just been talking. He told me I'll remind him of his daughters. And she says, yeah, it's either that or their nieces. By the way, I learned that in my research, right? So everything in the book, I didn't make up. I didn't make up anything. This is real stuff. So,
It's so obvious it is. I mean, there is that resonance of authenticity that is just profound.
Right.
And And it is everybody who reads it, anyone who reads it, will be able to relate to it, will be able to chuckle, will be able to go, ah. And
right.
You know, while their stories, you know, a lot of them are very sad, the resilience of these women and the joy that they find and the peace and the tranquility that Miss Pearl provides them with is just, it's a wonderful story.
Right. Oh,
and
thank you.
And
well, there's a lot
story.
Of it's stories is what it is. It's a lot of stories. It looks like we're getting close to the end because I need to go and do something for my friend. But
mm-hmm.
I was, you know, if you want to, I thought maybe we could close out with the Happy Harvey story and let everybody know that how much I love you all and thank you for your support. Boat Mom said that she already read it, and I'm so grateful to you, Barbara, for having me on your show and supporting me through all of this. And we're just getting started. So I will encourage everybody to just put in your email, and when I'm with you again, you and I have talked about doing music programs and stuff on your
mm-hmm.
light show. I'd like to post that and just create a big, beautiful, my dream is to have this big, beautiful group of women that just all support each other and love each other. And I appreciate you so much. So I need to go, but if you want to play some music,
I've got the Harvey story, and I'll play that, and then I have some of the other music from the book as well that I will play, guys, and then I will close the show out. And as far as where we go from here, obviously, Cynthia will be back and we'll be doing more of this. But if any of you are looking for readings and stuff like that, I'm flopping over to Curious Times. Chris has Doug DeLong on for the first hour, and then I'll be doing readings. So come and join me there. And Cynthia, thank you so much. And we're going to listen to Happy Harvey, and then I'll play some of the other songs, and then we will close it out.
I love you. I love you. I love you.
Love you, too.
Okay.
Take care now. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
So, I hear this is your first time, Harvey. Or have you been with a woman without your daddy knowing?
No, ma'am.
Harvey was bewildered and a little confused. Sugar started taking off her clothes, revealing beautiful firm breasts, a long waist, and perfectly shaped hips that were swaying back and forth to a silent rhythm.
Excuse me? Ma'am, what are you doing?
Harvey began dripping with perspiration.
We're going to make Mr. Happy happy.
Sugar put her hands below Harvey's belt buckle.
Oh, my. Oh, my, my, my. Don't worry, honey. This happens sometimes.
I don't believe anything's going to happen, ma'am. Now, don't get me wrong. You're a lovely girl. But honestly, Mr. Happy only tingles when I see a hard, muscled body attached to a tight, firm buttock and a pair of man's trousers, if you know what I mean.
I think I do. I also like a hard, muscled body attached to a tight, firm buttocks in a pair of man's trousers, if you know what I mean.
You're the first person I ever told. I know my father has different expectations for today, but honestly, I don't see this happening. I'm not sure what I'm going to do about the way I feel about men. But I really can't help it.
Poor Harvey was sweating profusely and feeling more nervous and confused by the minute.
I think my father's suspicious. That's why he brought me here today. You're a very beautiful woman, Sugar, and really sexy. But I'm afraid it's not going to happen today or ever.
Sugar was a sweetheart of a gal.
I've got an idea. The springs on this bed are pretty loud. How about I jump up and down on the bed and yell something like, "Ride 'em, cowboy," while you yell something like, "Yeah, baby, yeah." Then when I give you the signal, you say, "Yeah, sugar, yeah." Your father will think everything is hunky-dory, and I can make my money.
Sounds good to me.
Let's do it.
And they did. If you read the book, you will experience more and more of this wonderful wisdom and this magic that Cynthia has woven. Okay, here comes Speakeasy.
Good to see you. Come on in. We're flying high with Bootleg Jim. Forget your worries, forget your blues. We're gonna take good care of you. Speak easy, boy. Speak easy, boy. Take down. Want to dance, play some poker, and take your chance. We want you to have some fun. Just take it easy, don't come undone. Speak easy, boy. Speak easy, boy. Keep down the shut us are pretty, the drinks are strong. Have yourself a good time all night long. A gentleman's club for gentlemen. You know we'll welcome you back again. Speak easy, boy. Speak easy, boy. Take down.
Playing all the instruments, but she's doing the singing and she wrote it. This one is called If Texas Was a Woman.
back in 23. Big Lake, Texas was the place to be. Some bankers, investors, a couple of nuns funded a well back in 21. 18 months, 5 feet a day. The Santa Rita well finally made the pay. They did the Santa Rita boogie. They did the Santa Rita boogie. They did the Santa Rita boogie and they boogie-woogied all night long. Day after day from May to June, the oil kept coming and it started a boom. They finally set pipe to control the flow. Texas tea, the Santa Rita gold. It was named for a saint of impossible things. It's amazing what a little bit of faith can bring. They did the Santa Rita boogie. They did the Santa Rita boogie. They did the Santa Rita boogie and they boogie-woogied all night long. They did the Santa Rita boogie. They did the Santa Rita boogie and they boogie-woogied all night long. People started coming in from miles around. San Angelo became an old boom town. The cactus was built 14 stories high. The Concho River was the water supply. A college, a theater, saloons in the train, plenty of men, and all the girls came to do the Santa Rita boogie. They did the Santa Rita boogie. They did the Santa Rita boogie and they boogie-woogied all night long. They did the Santa Rita boogie. They did the Santa Rita boogie. They did the Santa Rita boogie and they boogie-woogied all night long. They did the Santa Rita boogie and they boogie-woogied all night long.
Sent me one last song, and it's called Deep Pockets.
You got deep pockets, I could tell in a flash. You got some deep pockets. Mighty fine, ask me how I know you are the man for me. Hey, Mr. Deep Pockets, are you looking for some company? You got deep pockets, I could tell by your style. You got some deep pockets. I can see by the way that you walked in the room, just like you're ruling the roost. Hey, Mr. Deep Pockets, I want to take off your boots. The girls here, they settle for beer. I like fine champagne. I appreciate you got down there in the deep pockets. Let's go upstairs. We'll dance all night, you and me in mine. Hey, Mr. Deep Pocket, I want to take off your boots.
With all of this wonderful, wonderful music is Pearl by Cynthia Jordan. I truly enjoyed this book, and I highly recommend it. I don't recommend a lot, but I do recommend this one. I'm going to close early. I'm going to pack my stuff up and go upstairs and warm up my cards. I'm going to be on Curious Times with Chris and Doug DeLong. Doug DeLong, who is, by the way, a very, very, very distant relative, but you know, there's something about the blood in the DeLongs that just kind of sings to the mystical field. There's another DeLong, George DeLong, out on the West Coast who does dream interpretation. You might want to check George out as well. Hopefully sometime, someday, I will get him to come on the radio as well. So until next time, until next week, until next Wednesday when James is going to be with me, and we are going to be doing probably past lives and all of the other good stuff that he is so wonderful at. I look forward to seeing you all then. And until then, thanks so much for coming, and I will see you next week. Bye-bye now.